From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 25th day of July 2018. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vakes from Stuart Peterson. A bit later in the program, Jonathan Kappas, Ag Policy Specialist from the University of Illinois, will join us to discuss yesterday's announcements by the United States Department of Agriculture as it relates to three different aid programs the Trump administration has put forth to help farmers weather the problems related to the tariff policies the president has been pursuing. And then, as we wrap up our time together, we'll take a look at the weather forecast with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media, Public Radio for the Farming World, online at willag.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
We're now joined by Jackie Vakes. She's from Stuart Peterson to take a look at what's been happening in Chicago. What a day in Chicago at the CME Group as it relates particularly to the wheat market where futures skyrocketed earlier in the day. What was behind the move, Jackie?
Well, I'll tell you, it's lovely to see that it can still do that if it wants to. You know, it was a wild day, and it's basically being driven by the fact that the estimates were cut for the EU to the lowest in the last 6 years for wheat production. As well as in the Black Sea. You know, here in the U.S., we've got the crop tour going on. It's in the second day. But the bigger part, I think, is that your non-commercials, your specs were very short compared to anybody else. So I think that this is definitely a short covering rally, and we'll see once if we can follow through on it tomorrow. We're just thankful because, you know, it's helped push everything else higher, too, as far as the corn and the beans go.
Who's taking the other side from them, or who has taken the other side from the specs then?
Well, it's hard to say, I guess. I would venture to think, you know, you never know who it is, and who it was originally doesn't mean it's going to be the same person at the end. But I think you're probably looking at the index traders, and the commercials themselves are actually long wheat. And so, you know, it's possible that it's the commercial too. You know, when you get out there and you want to sell something, you don't know who the buyer is. But that would be, to me, that's what it would be, because you look at the specs as short as they are. You look at the commercials, the index traders, even the non-reportables, which would be like farmers, you know, they basically have all been long wheat. And so it's any one of those three groups is who took the position against them.
I suppose if the commercials are long, that's a pretty good sign that the market has at least some strength underneath it. Speaking of which, the trade today spilled over into the corn market. Anything to talk about there other than just the spillover strength from the wheat into corn?
Well, we actually, it's not the best news. I mean, you know, but it can be violated. We have a double top in December corn from July 6th to today at 374. So that's going to be, you know, that's going to be a overhead resistance point, nearby resistance point. A lot of times your double tops will hold where your triple tops won't. And so we'll have to see once what happens on the overnights is whether or not they actually decide that they really want to jump on this bandwagon.
What do you see this week for the support and resistance levels we've been talking about for the past several months?
Well, I used weekly charts this week. I know that a lot of listeners use weekly charts. So September, major resistance at 370, support 337, and major support at 305. December, 380, 350, and 320. When you look at September beans, you've got major resistance. I would have to say I would think $9 would be pretty big resistance, but 905. Support at 8.15 and major support at 7.23. And November 9.15, again, $9 will be a tough place to get through. And then 8.26 and 7.36. Pretty ugly numbers on the way, way downside. But, you know, those are extremes is what they are. And so you never know. I just think people should know that they exist.
Always yield times acreage. We won't have an acreage update for a while, but, you know, we trend above and below those yields across the whole of the United States.
Right, we do. And like last week, I talked to you about the trend line information that Dr. Cordonnier has. It's 20 years worth of info. And when we look at this week, we really didn't see any big changes. Everything remained the same as last week. We still have 66% of the corn acres in the U.S. above trend line, 9.6 at, and 15.7 below. The one thing that's significant is South Dakota is sitting on the cusp of moving up to the above trend line. And when it comes to beans, we got 64.3% above, 16.4% at, and 13.5% below. And in that particular case, we've got Michigan and Mississippi that are looking like they'll probably move to the below trend line, and South Dakota move to the above trend line. So we'll have to see once how his information verifies next week. But I think I've been following it for years, and it's always been quite accurate. So we'll see once what happens.
What impact do you think yesterday's announcement by USDA of the aid package for farmers to offset the tariffs might be?
You know, Todd, we always know that the government basically moves at a grinding pace. It's always very slow, and they're going to have to report yields to be able to do it. So I think ultimately it'll have an impact, because I believe that, you know, any farmer who has got enough cash at this point in time probably will store a lot more grain than they normally would. Just because of the fact they know the money's coming, gives them the ability to basically pay their bills if they need to have that money for that. And then the ultimate thing is it slows down the pipeline, you know. And so I think it could have an impact either at the basis level or at the futures level, you know, trying to push them higher. We see it down in Brazil. You know, Brazil is $2.50 above the board right now. And it's primarily because of the fact that they just can't get the grain. You know, the farmer just can't get it to them, and or they don't want to get it to them. You don't know. But I think we could see a similar situation here. I don't think we'll ever see 2.5 above the board, but it's just the same type of situation.
You know, the pork producers in the United States are complaining bitterly about the export market, which just simply fell off of the map to zero in the last couple of weeks. Much of that had been going to Asia. What do we know about Asia's meat demand?
Well, I got some pretty interesting information. You know, China is expected to import 1.2 million tons of beef this year. That's up 23%. They're trying to meet the growing appetite of the Chinese for the meat, you know, and so it's a situation that is disappointing to us, of course, because it's not our meat necessarily. But growth in meat consumption in Asia is amazing. It's up 57% from last year, and the Middle East is up 47%. So, you know, once we get things straightened around, and it will happen at some point in time, I'm sure we'll be participating in that too.
Other places around the planet that we should talk about. I know when we look forward into the rest of the growing season here, we always start to think about South America and their planting intentions. What do we know from the farmers in that part of the world?
Well, you know, when you look at Argentina, Todd, and we've talked about this before, you know, basically they're expecting their corn production could jump to 44 million metric tons this year. And that's just due to better weather and the fact that there's such a problem with the export tax situation on beans. I think when you look at the bigger picture, and the thing we have to take away from it is what got us to the prices we were earlier on in this year, and it was Argentina and the fact that they had such a serious drought going on down there. So it looks like we could have the flip situation going into next year's crop. So we have to really keep a good track on what they're doing down there.
And finally, each week you've been keeping track of freight rates in Brazil for us. Any updates on it?
Oh my gosh, it's just a disaster. I can't even imagine what it's like to be a farmer or a commercial down there at this point in time. They're not settled yet. They're going to have hearings over the next couple of weeks with the public. And we may get an answer sometime in August. They say the 3rd of August is the earliest, the 27th perhaps, if it has to go to like their Supreme Court. But I thought some other things were interesting. Cargill came out and said these new freight rates are breaking the way the chain of supply works. In other words, they're not getting grain. It unbalances contracts, which you and I talked about last week. Farmers can't deliver on commitments that they've made. And it compromises the sustainable expansion of agriculture in Brazil. And I think that's a not so veiled threat, you know. And so forward contracting has just absolutely stalled. It's at only 16% for 18-19 crops. We're normally looking at about 33% of the crop. But get this, this is the part that's very scary. Fertilizer deliveries are delayed. They import 70% of their fertilizer compared to us at 50%. So you know, the freight rate thing is just driving everything crazy, and nobody is delivering fertilizer in a lot of places anymore. It's all sitting in the ports is where it's sitting right now. So if you look at the farmer from the southern Brazil part, they start planting full season corn a little later in August. Mato Grosso is always the first state to plant beans, and they start by September 15th. So Mato Grosso right now only has one-third as much fertilizer as they had in 17. And Paraná only has 40% of the seed, the fertilizer, and chemicals so far. So you can see, you can picture the picture, right? It's getting worse. And now add this. We've known that this has gone on for years because the biggest farmers down there barter with the grain companies for financing. So they commit to deliver enough beans, and that's primarily in Mato Grosso, but they commit to deliver enough product after harvest in exchange for all of their inputs. Grain companies aren't willing to do this for 18-19 because they just don't know what their costs are going to be due to the freight rates. So this is just one huge ball rolling down a hill that is just adding more and more and more problems and implications. And so I guess the question that comes to my mind is, can they be a reliable supplier with all of this going on? And it possibly could, you know, really benefit us. You hate to think that we're going to benefit from their pain, but it could very much benefit us and maybe force China even to come back here and buy something, because I just don't think this is going to be cleaned up very quickly.
It'd be all interesting to watch. Hey, thanks so much.
Thank you, Todd.
That, of course, is Jackie Vakes. She is with Stuart Peterson. Well, you know, yesterday afternoon, the United States Department of Agriculture held a press conference to announce $12 billion in aid for farmers, growers, and others in the United States impacted by the tariffs and the policies that the president has been pursuing as related to trade over the last several months. We're now joined by Jonathan Kappas, agricultural economist and policy specialist here on the U of I campus to take a look at what was released. It looked to me, Jonathan, as if it was pretty short on details. What do we know about the package?
Well, I think short on details is probably the best way to describe this. It appears to have been rushed out before we know a whole lot about the production this year, frankly, and before we know exactly how these payments will be calculated and all of that. What we do know is they've got about a three-part system where they're going to make direct cash payments to farmers of some commodities, particularly soybeans. Looks like they got sorghum, corn, wheat, cotton, dairy and hogs receiving payments. Then they're going to use some of the purchasing authorities to buy some commodities off the market, particularly specialty crops, fruits and nuts, and then donate those back out to food banks. And then finally, there's something in here about a trade promotion program, which is, you know, where they're putting money in to try to expand or develop new markets, which seems ironic given that the payments themselves are because they've drastically harmed export markets, but be that as it may, that seems to be what they're doing.
So we're looking at about $12 billion, but even within that $12 billion, there doesn't seem to be very much information about how it will be divvied up among those three particular programs that they'll be using to aid agricultural interest across the United States. Have we been able to discern how that might be divvied up at all?
No, we do not have any of those details. It says the news reports indicate, which all come out of the briefing I think USDA provided to journalists yesterday, but the news reports indicate that there's some sort of production basis. So, you know, you're going to report soybean bushels and they're going to divvy up some amount of this money apparently into a direct payment based on production. We can probably guess by the way this looks that the bulk of the funds will be in the cash payments. Then they'll use a subset of that money to do the purchase and donation program, and then probably a far smaller amount on this trade promotion program. Again, it seems tough to think you'd spend a lot of money on trade promotion at the same time we're picking trade fights with pretty much all of our trading partners around the world. So I'm not sure how much they're expecting to put in that. But I would, if I were betting on this, I'd say a whole lot of cash goes out in the form of direct payments to the main commodities listed here.
There, all these programs are under the Commodity Credit Corporation, which was created during the 1930s. And I'm wondering if they really have authority to go ahead and move that much money.
Well, that's a big question. The CCC, like you said, that's the mechanism we use for all farm programs, all payments, even the conservation programs go, all come out of that Commodity Credit Corporation. And really what it is a direct line into the Treasury with borrowing authority so that they can borrow against what we have and then make payments. So whether they have the authority or not, it's pretty broad authority under the Charter Act of the CCC. The question comes into play in that we have direct cash payments to farmers based on ARC and PLC calculations. So oftentimes you can get into this argument, or the legal sort of perspective is that once Congress has spoken about how payments are to be made, then the USDA has a lot more limited authority on creating its own payments. But that's sort of almost academic. I mean, the reality is they've decided they can use this authority this way. OMB apparently would have signed off on it. The president signed off on it. So it would take some sort of lawsuit or something or Congress would have to step in and stop the payments. It would be the only way that you would see some sort of blockage or some reason to stop the payments. Otherwise, the authority, they'll have an argument for using it.
So a couple of questions that come to mind. One of them is about the timing of the release of this. Are there policy issues related around that?
No, the timing of this is very questionable itself, because we have no details on how the payment is to be made or calculated, and we do not have, we don't know what production is, particularly for these fall harvested crops like soybeans and corn. So it's really hard to understand rushing it out now before we even know what kind of losses there are and how that looks. So those sort of timing questions really, lead you to, is this all just for politics and to change the story and to, try to get some, calm down farmers who've really been hurt by these trade war mess. And maybe get them to just, buy some peace between now and November.
And on that end, do you suppose this will actually help over the long run or not? Of course, Sonny Perdue said just a short-term fix.
Yeah, I mean, nobody sees any long-term benefit out of this. In fact, long-term, it's probably a negative just on the political optics alone. So the challenge for what the president's doing as far as farmers are concerned isn't just that prices have fallen because of these tariffs. It's that we're damaging our reputation as a reliable supplier around the world, and we're picking fights with our major customers for farm exports. Those markets took decades to build up, and we're tearing them down inside of weeks. So throwing $12 billion back out, first off, doesn't even cover the losses that farmers are going to likely, the kind of losses we might be talking about. And those kind of losses are going to show up over multiple years. I mean, this trade policy is making real problems with our export markets and our customers. So paying $12 billion now, particularly in announcing it in July before we know even what crops look like and what the next round of trade disputes are, isn't going to solve anything. And it certainly isn't going to help with the massive amount of damage we're doing over the long term in these markets. And so, again, it comes right back to that same question we had before, that why do this? Why do this and why do it now? And I mean, the only answer that seems to pop back up is this is all politics.
Jonathan Kappas is a policy specialist on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois, dedicated to agriculture. You can read more from him and his colleagues on the Farm Doc Daily website. In fact, if you'll scroll down on that website, you'll find the Gardner Policy Series. It's dedicated to agricultural policies across the planet and in Washington, D.C. That's at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Then scroll down and look for the Gardner Policy Series. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for this Wednesday afternoon. Drew Lerner is here from World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. Drew, we have not checked in on China recently. I'm wondering how their corn and soybean crops are making it through the growing season.
Well, actually, they've done very well up till now. It looks like, though, a high-pressure ridge is building in aloft across the heart of the country right now. And for the past 7 to 10 days, there has been a general lack of precipitation across the center of China's crop country. And the ground, the topsoil, has already become very short. Now, subsoil moisture is still favorable because of the good rains that occurred earlier in the season, but it looks like this pattern is going to continue for at least another week to 10 days, and it looks as though the temperatures are going to get rather hot as well, with temperatures getting up into the upper 90s, into the lower 100s on a near-daily basis across east-central portions of the country. That's going to accelerate that drying trend, and I'm pretty sure that by this time next week, we're going to be looking at some stress across the heart of their corn, soybean, peanut, cotton, and rice-producing areas in the middle of the country.
Speaking of stress, here in the United States, there have been in the South some extraordinary numbers showing up. What do we know about the heat there?
Well, the heat has receded to the south, finally. We saw the hottest weather yesterday in South Texas. But, of course, a week ago, we started with the heat in the central and southern plains, and it took numerous days to retreat southward. And we saw extremes of 100 to 113 degrees occurring day after day across some of that region in Oklahoma and Texas. Serious stress to livestock and crops, whether they're irrigated or not, were stressed. And certainly the dry land crops across the region were in pretty serious shape even before the heat started, and now they're in even worse condition. The heat is gone for now, and when I say the heat, I'm talking about the extremes. We're still going to see 90-degree temperatures in the southern plains for a while. Starting about a week to 10 days from now, the end of next week, we will start heating that area back up again. And as we go into the first weekend in August and on into the following week, the heat is probably going to become rather impressive again across the region. Maybe not as hot as this past week, but getting back up around and slightly over 100 once again.
And then in the 12 Corn Belt states that stretch from Kansas to the North Dakota over to Ohio and down into Kentucky, looks to me like things are cooling down towards the weekend.
Absolutely they are. Well below normal temperatures will occur. It'll be a really great amount of relief for the human beings out there, but from a crop perspective, it's going to offer some relief as well and give them a chance to rest a bit and to conserve our soil moisture for those areas that are fighting a little bit of dryness. The coolness will abate, though, as we get towards the end of next week. Just as I mentioned, for the southern plains, starting to warm back up again, so will the Corn Belt. And as we go into that first weekend in August and on into the following week, temperatures will become seasonably warm once again, especially in the western Corn Belt. Nothing exceptionally hot, but this is it just kind of highlights the importance of the rain that we should get over this next week to week and a half in the drier biased areas like Michigan and parts of Missouri and Illinois and Kansas, parts of southern Iowa. All of these areas need to take full advantage of this cooler bias that we have, and hopefully we can get enough rain to lift the soil moisture so that when we go back into the warmer and drier bias, that these crops will be better prepared for it. Otherwise, we're going to see a greater level of stress for those locations.
Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate it.
You bet. Have a great day.
You too. That is Drew Lerner. He is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. I'm Todd Gleason.